to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai's glory, his divine story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving greetings to all our sisters and brothers. This is your host Karuna and I'm coming to you live from the magical, mystical, buzzing with divine energy land, the abode of supreme peace, on this auspicious 8th day of the sacred Navratri. Today is the 28th of September 2017 and the current time in the ashram is 45 minutes past 9 a.m. that is Indian Standard Time. You're tuned to Morning Glory on Thursday Live and I'm late in signing in because of the yagna that is still going on in the Purnachandra Auditorium. Thank you for your understanding in that regard. And thank you also for your company on Radio Sai's Asia Stream. Our sacred home, our spiritual headquarters, Prashanthi Nilayam, India, is the place to be right now, dear sisters and brothers. Amidst the chanting of the sacred mantras, potent smoke rising from the sacrificial fire since the yagna began on the 24th of September, it appears as though the gods in high heavens are accepting our offerings and they're pouring their blessings in the form of the much-needed rain in Puttaparthi Valley. It rained profusely yesterday evening, yesterday morning, and also through the night. Most part of the night it was raining here and heavy, consistent rain. The weather, therefore, is cool and pleasant, and the ambience is charged with the sacredness of the incessant and grammatically correct chanting of the Vedam by thousands of devout Sai students, Vedic pandits, and Babaji's devotees of every caste, creed, and race. This is the place where the revival of the Sanatan Dharma can be experienced firsthand. This morning as I was driving in, even outside the walls of the ashram on the main road, before I entered the Gopuram gate, I could actually smell the fragrance of the yagna outside. So if I was in charge of the world, I would have this giant exhaust fan spread the smoke and the fragrance to the entire universe so that everybody could experience what we are experiencing here. But I'm sure yagnas are taking place all over the world and in many parts of India right now, and everyone has the same prayer. Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy. Here in the ashram, every bit of creation, from the grains of sand to the breeze that carries the fragrance of the herbs that are being offered in the yagna, to the flora, the fauna, everything is reverberating with the high sacred energy of the Navratri. And I hope, dear sisters and brothers, you too are partaking of this prasadam from Prashanthi Nilayam through the daily web streaming by Team Radio Sai of everything that's happening here, both AM and PM. Every evening, the programs in the Mandir and the scholarly talks are adding to the glory of the Supreme Divine who visited our earth as the Purna Avatar to revive the way of life based on love, peace, non-violence, right conduct, and of course, truth. Baba reminded us that Sanatan Dharma is a way of life that allows for inclusion, for poise, tolerance, plurality, harmony, and he lived it by his own example. Therefore now, dear listeners, is a perfect moment to mentally offer our love and gratitude at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. On that reverential note, I'm happy to bring you a special conversation this morning, one of my favorites, and I mean it and you will know when you listen, with my colleague Dhananjaya Sheth. This is a very recent one. I just recorded it a week ago. Now, a few years ago, I had recorded another conversation called Tris with Divinity with Dhananjaya Sheth, which was very much enjoyed by our listeners. Now, Dhananjaya Sheth is a name not too many people recognize around here because he's better known as DJ. Brother DJ is a very driven young man who was recently assigned a very important and sensitive task connected to our archives project. You know, we have the Sri Satya Sai archives coming up. And he rose to the occasion, and not only did he deliver it, he also set a world record, I believe. As you listen to this interview, do bear in mind that DJ is a maverick, and he kept the best part of the information to the very end. In fact, he almost didn't mention it, and I kept saying thank you and goodbye and sign up and closing my interview, and then he'd say, I have one more thing to share and one more thing to share, and he revealed the gems right at the very end. So I urge you to listen to this entire interview to the very end. So please stay with the show, enjoy this special conversation with Dhananjay Sheth, and this will be followed by a brand new episode of Tryst with Divinity. This interview has been conducted by Mrs. Sumitra Krishnan from Chennai, and her guest is Kirtana Kumar. So Tryst with Divinity with Kirtana Kumar is a must listen to and enjoy interview conducted for us by Mrs. Sumitra Krishnan of Chennai. Both these interviews are yours to enjoy, and I hope I will receive a lot of feedback to both these conversations. Until we meet next Thursday, have a wonderful Thursday, a great Navratri, a holy Dasera, and Jai Sai Ram. And please enjoy the rest of the show. Sai Ram, dear listeners. Recently at Radio Sai, there was a small internal celebration to mark a special milestone that we had reached in connection with the work with the Sri Satya Sai archives. Now, this was led by one of my colleagues, my brother, Dhananjay Sheth, and it involved, since 24th of June, this young man has been up and about and reporting to work at 3:30 a.m. and working for very long hours. And what he has achieved is something quite remarkable. As a matter of fact, in Prashanti Nilayam, we do things without any fanfare. So if only we had called the Guinness Book of World Records, we actually made one. But we didn't involve them because that would have involved having them monitor our work throughout. We never thought of it like that. Only in hindsight, we realized we have broken a world record. So on that celebratory note, I welcome my colleague, Brother DJ, Sai Ram DJ.
Sai Ram Karuna Didi.
It's very nice to have you. Now, you have to tell our listeners and stop being so modest. What was this audio digitization project that you led? What was it about?
Saram to all. I feel honored to stay in this conversation with you.
Likewise.
They say in Treta Yuga, Hanuman could cross the ocean.
Uh-huh.
In Kali Yuga, Swami made me cross through this entire digitization project. All said and done, it was decided by Swami that this project had to be done, and he used me in turn as an instrument to get the entire thing done. And I should say, I should confess here that it's not only me who did the entire dissertation, It was a Radio Sai team who involved themselves in this entire dissertation.
And a few Sevadals helped us also.
Yes, and let me tell you what is this entire audio digitization is all about. In the world, we'll see many gods who came, and only Bhagwan Satya Sai Baba, as a god, we have some kind of a authenticity record that we could keep it for the future.
No one took a doc film or a visual of, or even a painting on the spot of Rama's time or Jesus's time.
Exactly.
That is right.
So, during his lifetime of 85 years, Swami gave more than 2,500 discourses.
Mm.
Like 2,500, we just got a count, but it is more than that. And many discourses we could not record because the availability of technology at that point of time was not there.
For example, when he said Manasa Bajrig first time, there was no recording equipment.
And there were discourses given in a special group of people in interview time and all. We could not capture those moments. Mm. But on record, yes, we have more than 2,500 discourses which Swami himself has given in public. So, apart from this 11,000 cassette what I have digitized, that consists of about 2,500 or more discourses, and also the music concerts that happened in presence of Swami, and the talks and proceedings that happened before Swami.
So, when you say digitized, you took them from formats like old spools and 8mm movies?
This digitization, I have concentrated only about the tape to digital format.
I'm
not concentrated about spools and all.
Okay, so these are cassette tapes.
So the collections from 1970s onwards.
Cassette tapes.
So before that, whatever we had them in spools. And yes, those also we have got it digitized, but not in-house.
Mm-hmm.
We have outsourced and we have got the digitization done. this process actually involves a kind of converting the analog form of captured version into a digital, so that we can use them into Radio Sai broadcast. We can use them into different packages. Like if you want to make a short documentary, we can just take the digital format of the captured version and we can make use of this.
And I'm assuming it will also be archived.
Yes.
I see. 11,000 tapes.
Yes.
That's a lot of... How many hours would that translate to roughly?
If you ask me frankly, this is a real-time capture work. It is not key, you just put and go. It is like if the cassette duration is 60 minutes, 60 minutes physically we have to sit and go through capturing. So technically it's about 11,000 hours of capturing that happened.
No wonder you were at work at 3:30 a.m.
Actually, it got into my nerves. I should say when every day when I used to get up, it was not like, you know, I had to get up, yeah, not like that. Like some inspiration was there, some motivation to, you know, get ready and, you know, just come off.
And I must tell our listeners, our DJ is so motivated, dear listeners, that I know an insider story. One morning he got up, showered, came down, and he realized the street was exceptionally dark and it was too quiet, only to realize it was 1:30 a.m., not even 3:30 a.m. So for a layperson, what can you share about the technical details of this project? How do we understand? What was involved?
See, if you ask me about the technicality, it involves two stages.
Mm-hmm.
One is outsourcing the entire thing to one more organization. There ends the technicality because we are just outsourcing to them and they do the thing and they give them a final product to us.
That was one option.
One option. The second option was we thought we will do in-house digitization. So for video section, if you ask me, like there are a few devotees who used to come and constantly help our Radio Sai. So those people had some kind of contacts in Chennai and who helped us to get the video digitization started. So that point of time, we never thought ki the day will come when we have to start the audio digitization, because it happened about 3 years back that, you know, video digitization started. And by then, actually, we never got any kind of clue as to what could be the ball figure of tapes that we have in our archives. So, yes, technicality involves for digitization, like we need to have a good cassette player.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have good cables, capture card, that is sound card, good software, good system, and good reference speakers. So, all these things involves in the process of digitization. Like if you take a simple sound card which comes with the default computer, in that I can just hook up only one cassette player at a time. And the quality of that sound card, we cannot assure whether it match up to the quality that we are demanding. So after discussing with our colleague, so we took their feedback and, you know, we asked them how we can fasten the digitization. So that's when, you know, they suggested, why don't you go for a multi-channel sound card. So, at presently, you know, we had connected about 33 cassette players onto 4 different systems.
Wow.
So
Simultaneously.
That means in 1.5 hours duration, I could capture 33 tapes at good quality of digitization. So, that was the technicality aspect involved. And also, it's just not about capturing the tape. We need to assign the appropriate name for the each track.
Yeah.
So that means if 33 cassettes in 1.5 hours, if I have done, means 33 tapes need to be logged then and there. So that was quite a challenging thing. That's when after 1 or 2 days of digitization, you know, I was praying to Swami, Swami, give me some solution wherein I don't go through this messy situation of, you know, identifying which tape corresponds to which track which I have digitized.
Yeah.
So that's when what I did, I created some kind of a multi-sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And multi-session, pre-hand I had named the tracks itself with the cassette unique number which we had given. And this was the homework which I should do at night when I go back home.
Oh.
So I should take one laptop home and I should create session which is enough for the day.
Okay.
So that means in 1.5 hours, 33 into 9 sessions.
So you would pre-label them on the
tracks. So that when I hit the record button, the track automatically comes with the name of the cassette.
So that way everything is catalogued.
Catalogued, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So also, before digitization, our team had done a good job of, you know, giving a unique number to the each tape and they had done kind of a metadata work also. So in future, suppose if you want to search something related to, let's say, truth. So if you just give one search, all the discourse and the clips where Swami has spoken about truth, they should pop up. So that was the intention behind this entire dissertation. And yes, these are the technical details. I think we should keep it in mind in future also
to work smarter.
Yes.
DJ, you really were living, breathing, thinking, working digitization for the past 2.5 months. And we could see that there was nothing else. It was oozing out of your pores, digitization. What was the inspiration behind this drive? I mean, waking up at 3:30, sometimes at 1:30, working round the clock. And at the end of the day, you went home with your laptop and you started doing all the preparing the cards, the master cards. What was the inspiration?
In 2002, when Swami had come for inaugurating the studio.
August 29th?
Yes. Swami had told very clearly for a smaller group of ADSI members who were there at that point of time. And that time I was a student. Like, I had lost the opportunity to be there.
Me too.
In that visit, if you analyze the
conversation
what Swami had with the boys, Swami told very clearly that discourse translation should not be done in hurry. Point number one. And we should choose appropriate words in the translation. And Swami said, when I'm giving discourses, sometimes the translator would use some other word wherein the simple word could fit in. And Swami said, we should air only the spiritual content, and also the content must be edited with lot of care.
And he said, do not rely entirely on computers, because, for example, if you have to say something about a book and by mistake someone types it as cook,
yes,
the computer with the spell check will not catch
Correct.
It. You need human discretion.
Correct.
Yes.
So this always there back of our mind when we take up any project. So what happened in 2009 or so, GV sir, you know, he took initiation of this entire dissertation.
Yes.
And that time we didn't know actually what we will end up doing actually. He just called up and said, we have to do this one project called Bajagovindam series and Bhagavata series. So we're like, wow, we'll take up some job and do. And that time, you know, it was a set of 34 cassettes of Bhagavad Gita and about 30 discourses of Bajagovindam series, which Swami gave in 1973 summer course discourses.
And what did Professor Venkatraman want? To be digitized?
He told us to digitize the entire
these two series.
And clean them and keep it ready so that, you know, we can do the retranslation of the entire discourse. And that's how the initiation started. And by God's grace, we could finish both the series. And after that, he just told us ki we have to do lot more digitization, and it was given to me. To be honest with you, money speaks a lot. And personally, when Sai Prakash approached us and he said, can we outsource this to the outside people? Then I said, see, it involves huge amount of money and we should not waste Swami's money. Come what may, we will do in-house digitization. And I used to pray that time, Swami, I have given the word to you that we will do the digitization, and we will do it, come what may. And we stuck to it, and that was there back of my mind that yes, I should do the digitization. Time passed, and we were thinking, you know, as students' life, you know, when teacher asks you to do homework, we'll give lame excuses. Ma'am, that was not there, this is not there. Same way when GV sir used to cross-examine and ask us, have you done this? We used to give excuse saying that, sir, we had that work, this work, and kept on postponing. It was not intentional postponing,
yes.
It just got postponed because we were involved in some other recordings, making Bhavanjali, Nada Brahmam, Mandir audio working, all that. So, time had come when Swami blessed us that we should have an archive building. And I was part of the Bhumi Puja ceremony. I was lucky enough to be a part of the ceremony. And I was lucky enough to get one coconut also to break there with all the trustees and people. Like, I was amazed. I was saying, Swami, how could I get this chance when so many people are there? Like, now when you sit back and analyze, there's a proper, you know...
There's a method to the madness.
Method, yeah. So I never knew that, you know, one coconut which I'm going to offer there...
It removed all the obstacles.
Yeah. One is removing the obstacles. Second thing is, you know, ended up doing the 11,000 cassette digitization.
What an honor.
So that time, like, we used to tell we don't have proper equipment and, you know, kept on giving excuses. Then somewhere around June, first week of this year, devotee calls me up, and it was a direct instruction from Swami that I have not done the work which I have promised to Swami.
Oh, somebody called you and said
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he told me straight. He said, DJ, you have not done the work which you had promised to Swami. I was in tears and I had no clue. And when he told that, I was thinking, Swami, if I had promised you that I will do something, it's intentionally I wouldn't have skipped the work. If at all, if I missed somewhere, please guide me and initiate the thought in me that what I'm supposed to do. So that was the only prayer which I had. Next day again he calls me up and he says, Swami is indicating that the work was assigned to you through GV sir and three boys were involved in that. So that's when I realized GV had told me to do the digitization of the audio tapes, and I quietly passed on to my juniors, colleagues, and it was on a standby mode.
Hmm.
Standby mode because not that they didn't want to do, it was just that, you know, we didn't have enough resources to pull the entire thing do. That's when I told the devotee, thank you for giving me this piece of information. Now I'll take up this as a priority work, and I kept aside all the work which was pending. I said, Swami, this is now, till I finish my decision, I'll completely surrender to you. Come what may, family life, everything I'll keep aside. For that matter, I should tell you that every day when I go back home, I'll go back only at around 8:30, 9 o'clock at home. My wife Akanksha, she'll not speak a word. She'll not tell you why you came late, all that. And after going home, what I'll do? I'll eat my dinner and again I'll sit on the work which goes until 12 o'clock, homework. So literally for 2.5 months, though my wife's there in front of me at home, I could not spend solid half an hour with her. Like, why I'm saying this is when, you know, when you ask me what was the motivation.
Mm.
So they say when it gets onto your nerve that we have to do this for Swami, rest everything comes as secondary for you.
And it's mighty nice of Akanksha to have cooperated so much.
Exactly. And when the best part of this entire decision is that when a Swami initiated this entire thing through one devotee, said that I should do the work, then I should not say I challenged Swami, but I really wanted to re-examine the entire scenario. Mm. I told Swami, yes, I will do this work which was pending and I promised you to do, but I have one challenge. It's that I'm going to take a phone, I'm going to swipe the contact list, I'm going to make a random call. And ask that person, do you have a cassette player? If yes, I want this for the digitization. If that person gives me, I'll accept this as your blessing. And that was the prayer. Trust me, I picked up my phone, just swiped the contact list, hit the random number, and that landed up with PT. His name is Vinod from primary school. I called him up at around 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I said, sir, I'm so and so. I need to borrow the cassette player if you have. He was like very happy. He said, please come, take the cassette player and go immediately. This was Swami's work. I was in tears. I said, Swami, this much is enough.
You got my confirmation.
Yes. Now onwards, I'm sure that it will happen. Even if I don't want to do, it will happen because it was your sankalpa that it has to happen. It will happen. So from that day, I don't know how things materialized here. Because I had only one sound card. Then I requested Sudhir Bhaskar, sir, can we arrange one more sound card? He said, we cannot buy for sure. I said, if not buying, at least can we borrow from somewhere?
Hmm.
Then he said, to locate where it is, I'll ask the required authorities. Then I contacted the director of Anandpur campus, Rajeshwari Patel ma'am. And she had, they had bought a brand new equipment. So I asked them, can we borrow that? She was very happy. Then we asked Chaitanya Jyoti people. They had an equipment. They also came forward. Then Hyderabad, Shivam studio. So we consulted district president. So they gave an equipment. Then Bangalore Geetanjali studio, they gave their equipment. So equipment landed. So we didn't have cassette players. We had only first cassette player, which Vinod had given, Vinod sir. So then I casually inquired with my wife, can you ask in Anandpur campus if they have old cassette players? That was the first call. So same day I got back 5 cassette players. Then I thought maybe I should ask primary school. From primary school I got some cassette players.
I can right now see about more than 12 in the studio just sitting around you and me.
So inside we have another 14 players.
So total how many?
So actually I had collected about 50 cassette players.
Wow.
Because at a time 33 player go. What happens if sometime, you know, tape gets stuck? So that time I don't want to spend time in removing the tape. So I'll just take the player out and substitute with one more player. So that time I can, you know, tweak with the cassette player to get the cassette out. So that was the exercise which happened. And, you know, by, I don't know how it happened, but it just happened. Like if you and me decide to start such kind of massive work, you can take it from me, for sure it will not happen. It's only Swami wanted this to happen, that's why it has happened. Take it from me, because with full conviction I'm telling you, it is only he who got this entire digitization done. And I feel very happy because Swami gave this opportunity to be a part of the history.
Yes.
It's for posterity, like even 200 years from now, the content is available for the devotees to access, and you know, at least somewhere they can mention, they, you know, they'll tell, yes, some person from Radio Sai, they did it, and you know, it is there for us. So with that thing in, as a offering to Swami, I have just done this entire dissertation. And yes, if you ask me personally, it helped me a lot in the sense, if you want to get educated on these things, it's only one part of the story. You can join some, you know, sound academy, they'll teach you what is dissertation. But at personal level, I learned a lot from this entire exercise, because it teaches you first thing, discipline. What is time management? Third thing is, it teaches you what is stress management. Because while doing dissertation, my entire life was juggling between 30-35 minutes. Anything, I have to come back, report in the studio for next 35 minutes. Suppose if you call me, DJ, can you come and help me there? I have to see the time. Within 35 minutes, I should be back in the studio.
Because you have to change the sides.
I learned a lot, like to how to manage things. Like I have to listen all the authorities. Sridhar Bhaskar will tell me one thing. We have to do this recording. I have to get ready with that track recording also. And believe me, amidst all these things, I have done about 12 hours of interview recording here.
I have also come here for recording in your studio.
I have done that. Yeah. And simultaneously,
you were doing this work also happening.
Like if you sit back and just think now, no, I mean, if I were to assign a task of this nature, I wouldn't have agreed. Means as a new joinee of Radio Sai, if director tells me you have to do this, I would have ran away from this place. Means it's a real donkey's job.
Yeah.
But it never stuck to me as if it was a donkey job. Somehow it was a very pleasant task, and I can show you something, like how the book I had to write down each and every tape number, which I'll carry home and type it in the computer. Next day, come back and use them nicely. And it gave me tremendous amount of energy to focus on the cause. Nowhere I got distracted. There was one point of time when Sai Prakash said, we have to do this shooting. I said, Swami, please, I don't want to get distracted. And I don't want to tell no to him. Please, Swami, please help me out. That kind of prayer was enough, trust me. And somehow, that recording used to get
postponed.
Now we
know who's behind the delay of the shooting.
No. It was not that. I'm just telling
you. It was the prayer, because you had to stay focused on this.
If I tell CG, hey, can you postpone the recording, he may feel bad. So I used to pray to Swami, Swami, please ensure that, you know, this should not stop. And he used to ensure that, you know, it used to get postponed by till the time actually required for this. I remember the first shooting that happened was on 4th or 5th of September. The first shooting, that chroma thing that happened. And to be honest, you, on that day, I had finished 99.9% of my work. So I was relatively free. Like one section of the studio was actually come to halt. From these things, I can clearly tell you, it was Swami who planned the entire dissertation. And you cannot take even 1% of the credit for the entire work that has happened. So we have to be grateful to Swami. And I pray to Swami that more and more of such kind of work should be assigned to us, so that, you know, we'll be focused to Swami. We can be in tune with Swami. And one more thing which I want to tell you is, this entire 2.5 months time, no, I never got distracted, in the sense, nothing was bothering me. Like, at home, if somebody calls me up and say, no, this is happening, that is happening, I should say, okay, chal, no problem. Like, I had gone to that state that everything was insignificant in front of this Mahatask. After that dissertation, everything is making sense. He said, yeah, we shouldn't have given that much of energy for the thing which actually doesn't
matter, require, yeah. And we over-focus on such useless things in life sometimes.
So these are things which actually I learnt.
Oh, wonderful. What a worthy son of a worthy God you are.
And I must admit at this point of time, authorities like Chakravarti sir, Ratnakar sir, Prasad Rao sir, Sudhir Bhaskar sir, GV sir, they are like, they have to handle many situations in the trust. Amidst all this thing, they used to find time and they used to come to studio just to encourage us. Like I really felt, you know, overwhelming when, you know, Ratnakar sir spent about 1 hour in finding out what we are doing, how we are doing. And he was asking, why you want to distress 11,000 cassettes when Swami had given only 2,500 cassettes? Like I was amazed. It was a very quick question. Then I had to explain to him there was a reason. I told him, sir, you know, some cassettes of 60 minutes duration is there. Some cassettes will be of 90 minutes duration. So when there is a side change of 60 minutes, so we'll be losing about one sentence which Swami had told. But that will be there in the duplication tape of 90 minutes duration. So then I told him, sir, we have to distress the entire thing so that, you know, we'll find that extra sentence which was missed out in the 60 minute duration. And Chakravarti sir used to come and ask, what was the earliest date discourse that we have found? And his memory is very sharp, huh?
And he remembers dates and data, too well.
Yeah, when I told him, sir, we have done the thing, he said, have you captured that 1968 discourse? So I was like, yeah, that means he also is updated about the earliest cassette what we have in our collection. And Prasad Rao sir is coming and asking questions. And I should not forget GV sir. Though he is on advisory role in the Radio Sai, the amount of strain that he had taken to come and oversee the entire work, I should be grateful to him. Because of him, actually, you know, we joined the studio. Actually, when myself and Arvind Balasubramanian went for Padmaskar, he told, you make Jeevankatraman happy. If he is happy, I am happy. If I am happy, the entire world is happy. I feel somewhere that, you know, have made Jeevankatraman sir happy by doing the work which actually he had assigned to me. This is not a small work at all for any individual. It's a huge task by itself to be accomplished. So I feel somewhere that, you know, I have done justice in fulfilling his dream also. And I should be thankful to all the Radio Sai members, including all the administrators, for extending their help in getting the work done. And that's all I think I can talk about this distraction.
And we are so grateful to Swami for giving us the timely reminder. Otherwise, you know, we keep sometimes postponing things infinitely and indefinitely.
Yes.
And then these are very valuable assets. With time, all these cassettes that were set aside, they could have deteriorated.
And I should tell you, like, there are days when you told me that what inspired you 3:30 in the morning. I must tell you that there are days when, you know, when you put on the first cassette and when you play the button, like the day should start with, you know, Ravi sir's Kavali. That was like, that is enough to, you know,
energize you
for the entire day. There are days I've sent a message to him, brother, you have made my day, karke. And when I just played the cassette, no, the first starting sentence was Lembu Dhananjaya Lembu. Like, I was puzzled.
What
I
does
said,
it mean? With your name, Lembu means?
Lembu means, I don't know, maybe Lembu means awaken or get up. I don't know what it is. But that's what it is in one of the discourses.
And that's your name, Dhananjaya.
Yes. So it is there in the discourse. Now I've made a note of it. That will be my alarm tone, actually. Like, every day, you know, getting up with saying that Lembu Dhananjaya. I mean, what more blessing you want in your life?
Truly,
so, these are things.
You must have been on such a high, feeling a deep connection with Swami throughout this period. I can imagine. And what you have done is really priceless, and it is going to serve humanity for centuries to come.
Exactly. I feel proud to be a part of this Radio Sai team.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Truly. And dear listeners, this is what DJ has told us about is a small part of a much larger project, the Sri Satya Sai Archives, that Bhagwan, while he was still in the body, Professor G. Venkatraman had brought it up to Bhagwan's attention, and the archives have now come up, And the Central Trust and the Radio Sai team are looking out and sending requests to Baba's devotees all over the world. In case you have any assets in form of videos, audios, pictures or handwritten documents of Bhagwan, if you could share them with us and we can scan them and return the original back to you. And this is as part of a preservation effort to save for posterity for the next many thousands of years to come all possible relics associated with the Purna Avatar Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba.
Just to add one more thing here.
Yes, DJ.
Just digitizing 11,000 tape is not the end of the digitization at all.
Not at all. It's just the first step.
It's just the first step.
Yes.
Because now actually starts the bigger work.
Which is?
Which is we have to clean the track.
Uh-huh.
We have to edit the translator. Now we have to get in multi-language dubbing done for the translator. We have to do a transcription. It's a huge task by itself. I think we'll be more busy now actually.
Truly. And just for the interest of our listeners, many devotees had all these old films, 8mm, 16mm of Bhagwan's visits to their towns or homes, and they had kept it in their hearts thinking these are so precious in their lockers and in their drawers, and by the time they gave those to us, because of the temperature and the moisture, many of these tapes or films had fungus growing on them. So we've been through a very unique exercise, and a lot of effort was put into finding that one special machine. It's a homemade, a locally made machine that actually gently clears the layer of fungus off of the film. So after the fungus has been removed and the film has been cleaned, it is thereafter digitized and made ready for digitization. So as DJ said, this mammoth effort that he was a part of and that he was leading is just the first step. Many more steps, and with Bhagwan's grace, as this was achieved, I'm sure everything will be accomplished.
Yes, we just pray that Swami should shower more and more grace in finishing the task which he has assigned to all of us.
Because humanity is going to need his message,
yes,
for its survival on this planet. And as you said, the translation has to be in multiple languages.
Yes.
Everything has to be transcribed.
First you have to transcribe. That itself is a task by itself.
Yes. And then the accuracy of the translation.
Yes.
Has to, because these are very important topics.
Correct.
And people not only need language skills, but also the understand the fine nuances of spirituality.
And I must tell you one more thing which I've actually forgot. It was during your daughter's engagement time.
Uh-huh.
Engagement or wedding time it was. Mm-hmm. We had a get together, right?
Yes.
So just 2-3 days before that, what happened, I'll just wanted to narrate you. With that, I'll just stop here.
Sure.
So, Abu Dhabi people had come for Parth Yatra.
Mm-hmm.
And one person, he used to come and sit in the studio every day for about 3 hours, 4 hours. And I didn't know who he was, and he knows me apparently. So that's all it is. So remember one interview we did? You had interviewed one person, and that time also he was present there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, he is there. So
you never questioned
him? Nothing. I just told Sairam, that's all happened because I was busy with my own digitization. And the day he left after the Parth Yatra, he just came to studio. He said, I am so and so, and I felt honored to be here, and he went off. He went to Mangalore for a day or two before he left to Abu Dhabi. The day he landed in Mangalore, night when he slept, he got an amazing dream. And next day morning he calls me up, he says, brother, I'm starting catching the next flight, I'm coming to Parthi, and give me some work. I was like, what happened to you? Tell me first. He said, no, Swami came in a dream and he started shouting at me. I said, why should Swami shout at you, man? Then he said, no, Swami told Dhananjay, you know Dhananjay, I call him DJ. Then he said, yes, Swami, people call him DJ. You know why DJ? Because he's a devotional jockey. I was like so inspired. I said, Swami.
What a compliment.
Yeah, I said, Swami, thank you for telling this. Then I said, this is not shouting. Then it's a compliment to Swami. So he said, no, brother, that is only the first part of the story. Second part is Swami shouted at me saying that why didn't you go and help him? When he has a massive task in his hand, 1 week you simply wasted your time there. You would have helped him some way or the other. So he landed here next day. He asked me, brother, give me some work. I was like, if Swami had told you that you should come and help, he will tell you what he should do, what you should do in the studio. I am not here to assign any work to you, brother. So you do whatever you feel like doing. Then he asked, brother, can I arrange here and there? I said, do. So in the conversation, I just happened to notice that he also does audio editing.
Oh.
So that was like, you know, then I understood why Swami sends people at time. Like when you're mentioning about the task has not completed here, means Swami has already hinted that, you know, in Abu Dhabi, sitting in Abu Dhabi, you can contribute to Radio Sai.
Hmm.
Means if we send a track to him, he can edit the translator part out.
And he's seen us do it right here. Now that he knows what you have done, it's easy for you to communicate instructions.
So that way, you know, one language, at least we can be sure, in Arabic language, there will be some person, you know, who can take care of this. So just want to narrate this in...
Oh, thank you so much, dear devotional jockey, brother DJ, also known as Dhananjay Sheth. And I'm so happy to hear the behind-the-scenes story of yet another manifestation of our Lord, who we always say is the boss around here at Radio Sai.
And one last thing.
Okay, yes, yes,
one
DJ.
Last thing, which I shared only with Sai Prakash, with nobody else.
Now we want to hear it too.
Yes, like... Swami always says, if you take one step towards me, I'll take 100 steps towards you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that happen in the studio. Like at time morning when 3:30 when you come, we can hear his footsteps in the studio. When I'm telling this, I'm getting goosebumps. I could hear his footsteps. When I come out, actually, I can see the uncoiled cables coiled and kept in the stand.
Somebody is helping you out.
Yeah, means I don't see any person in the studio, but I've seen cable getting coiled and kept in the studio. So I just tell all the listeners, you just do Swami's work. He is there to come and do your work. With that, I just want to end.
Thank you so much for sharing that wonderful insight.
Yeah.
So it was both of you doing the work together.
Exactly.
You were messing the cables, Swami was tidying them up. Thank you, Brother DJ.
Thank you so much.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Here is an important announcement. Shri Satya Sai Archives is a state-of-the-art facility built with the objective of preserving the precious messages of Bhagwan Baba for posterity. These are audio recordings such as audio tapes, spools, cassettes and gramophone records, video recordings such as VHS, SVHS, Hi8, Mini DV and HDV tapes, Betacam, DVCam, Big and Small, DigiBeta, including 16mm and 8mm films. Also images, photos and negatives, color and black and white, and manuscripts, letters, articles, poems, songs, etc., all written exclusively by Bhagwan Baba. Currently, we have a very impressive collection of the above. Many of them have been donated by devotees. Before preserving these items, in the custom-designed vaults in the archival building, they have been digitized. This facilitates content access in electronic form and helps in spreading the message of Swami. Very few organizations in India and abroad are able to undertake this digitization work as the necessary technology and equipment needed are no more available. With difficulty, few organizations have been identified who are willing to undertake this digitization work. This digitization work has been entrusted to Radio Sai Division. It is possible that many devotees may have in their personal possession some or all of the above items. This is to appeal to such persons to provide access to such assets for us to digitize the same. If they so desire, we could also retain them for long-term preservation with due acknowledgement process being followed. Kindly get in touch with the following for further clarification and details. Professor Sudhir Bhaskar, Director, Radio Sai Division, Sri K. Chakravarti, Member Secretary, Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. Thank you and Sai Ram.
Sai Ram and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series on Radio Sai, where we have conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan. We offer you now a conversation with Miss Kirtana Kumar. Hailing from Chennai, Miss Kirtana belongs to a family of loving Sai devotees who have been engaged in Sai Seva for nearly 3 decades. After completing her Bachelor of Sciences from the University of Texas at Austin, she currently works for Microsoft as a software engineer in Redmond, Washington. She is also actively involved in various Seva activities in her center in the U.S. In conversation with her is Mrs. Sumitra Krishnan, an enthusiastic bhajan singer and a Radio Sai volunteer from Chennai. Being a certified coach from ICF USA, she is in fact the co-founder of Ananta Consulting and Ananta Foundation based in Chennai. This conversation was recorded in Chennai in February 2017.
Sai Ram brothers and sisters, Swami is a loving mother and a caring father to all of us. He has always demonstrated this practically. We now have with us Miss Kirtana Kumar from Seattle, USA. This conversation will revolve around how right parenting shapes children into good global citizens with a strong sense of values. Sai Ram Kirtana.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram.
You're a fine example of a well-groomed child, now a youth, instilled with values. And it's our pleasure having you in our studios.
It is definitely my blessing to be here and my pleasure to have this opportunity to share my growth as a child of Swami.
First, can you tell us about your family's experiences with Swami?
I mean, Swami has, I guess, started off long back when my dad was around my age, about in his early 20s. Swami blessed us through him. So he used to be a sevadal for a few years in Parthi and then always very involved here in Chennai, mm-hmm. With his activities. It started off, I think, when Appa was in Parthi, he used to help with a lot of, you know, carrying heavy rice bags, mm-hmm. Also taking care of the old people orphaned old people in Parthi who stay there. A lot of times he always tells me, I used to bury and, bury these old people. So he's been so involved and in his youth when he was in Parthi. And after that, you know, when my parents got married, it started off just after marriage, the first place they went was Parthi as part of their honeymoon. Before they started their honeymoon, the first place they went was Parthi. And since then, it's just been one after another. In fact, when I was in Amma's womb, and Swami had come to Chennai, and Amma was here listening to his discourse. And, she went back, and she had chicken pox immediately.
Ooh.
But, all these doctors were worried, and my grandparents were worried. Everybody around the family was worried. All Amma could say was, oh, this must be Swami's blessing on Kirtana. And, I've grown up, grown with no ailments to be worried about. So it's just always been Swami's blessings through my life that I have seen and experienced.
So nice. Kirtana, you mentioned about your dad helping in cremating bodies of orphaned old people in Parthi. Can you just elaborate on that?
Yeah, so from what my dad has told me as I was growing older, that, he had this very unique privilege. And I think he was there around Baba's 65th birthday, in that period of time, a few So he said that experience was so unique and very touching. So all of these old grandmothers, granddads who don't have usually don't have a family to look after them, when they, you know, leave their body, Appa used to go there to carry them, you know, just as if their own children are cremating the body. You know, there are a few of them would carry them to the place, and then they would do a prayer, they would do the last rites for these people, you know, kind of it gives an opening to his life. He's so far after that, you know, recognized such importance of respecting the elders, respecting their wishes. So for instance, after doing that many rites and this thing, I think that somehow influenced both my parents and all four of my grandparents to, you know, write a part of their last wishes whenever they leave their body, to donate their body for scientific research. So, for instance, when my grandfather, during his last days, he even reminded us, you know, in the bed of the hospital before a few days before he passed away, he even reminded us, just make sure you give my body for donation. So since then, I don't think my dad has gone so much for the, you know, cremation, but that has given him the benefits of doing this process for the souls that have left us. In fact, I want to recollect one more, you know, miracle that I have witnessed in my life because of Swami. So my grandfather, who I mentioned, who passed away, and he reminded, 10 years before that, he was in a very critical situation with a heart problem in the hospital. And I was only seven, eight years old that time. So he, if you anytime go and meet him, he's a big, big, big Ayyappa devotee. He'll only say Ayyappa. He'll call everybody Ayyappa. I call him Ayyappa Tata, for instance. So, so he would always say Ayyappa. And I mean, he would come with us for our bhajans or sometimes, but mostly he's just such a huge Ayyappa devotee. He goes to Sabarimala. And when he was, you know, in ICU, a lot of the doctors had given up on him to recover. Mm. And they even had told my parents that day, you should call the relatives and let them know, you know, he's almost there. My parents didn't do that. They were hoping for a miracle. They were praying. They were hoping things would change. And that next day, my grandfather is kind of telling my dad a little bit that, you know, Sai Baba came to the ICU in the night. He not a big, you know, he doesn't, for him his faith is Ayyappa, but he says Sai Baba came dressed in white. Oh. And he rubbed my body on with his hand. Mm-hmm. And he went, and then after that, you know, he said for that day, he said Sai Ram for everything. So it's just, I mean, and then, you know, I got to after that point, the next 10, 12 years, I had the experience to spend time with my grandfather. So that is like a rebirth, kind of a boon for me.
You would have had more experiences with Swami.
Yes, definitely.
So can you please share those experiences also?
Yeah, I mean, I already shared my birth itself was a Swami's miracle and a blessing to my life. And you know, a lot of times, every single day, somehow there is a miracle or you know, his grace has just been blessed in every part of our life. I can't even, you know, start listing every day. But one such experience was, I would say it was our families, my mom, me, and my dad's kind of a rebirth. During around my ninth grade time, we had gone on a vacation with a lot of families to Ooty. It was kind of a fellowship, kind of spend time with other families. And there were 10, 15 kids my age. And we all, on the way back from our vacation, we are all coming down the mountain we're all in one tempo traveler along with my dad and my mom, and we're laughing, giggling, playing, you know, young girls, it's what we do. They had a movie running. So we're all excited. We're going to the railway station back to go back home. And that point, something, the driver got distracted or something it happened. The vehicle almost was going to go fall down the cliff. And at that point, Amma, my mom, screamed, "Sairam!" And out of nowhere, it almost seemed like, you know, someone was holding the vehicle from falling down the cliff. It just, with one wheel on the road, it was hanging. And, you know, not just that, but immediately somebody came that we didn't know. They let us all, you know, brought us down from the tempo tower. All of the girls, little girls, all of us and my parents down. In fact, they even took all our suitcases from the top of the vehicle. Immediately from nowhere, another vehicle came. We all got in there. The suitcases were loaded again. We were back on the road in, you know, 30 minutes. It's just a miracle, like, the sequence of events. You don't expect something like that to happen without, you know, His grace and His blessings on us. So that was one miracle that I cannot forget. In fact, every year, it will happen on October 2nd. And, you know, it's always a holiday in India, October 2nd. So every year, since that day, we've had a bhajan in our house as a thanksgiving to Sairam. So it's just, and we invite all of the people nearby to come and sing bhajans. And it's a great kind of a remembrance of our rebirth because of
His grace.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Chennai, and now you are in Seattle.
Yes.
Let's talk about your childhood days in Chennai.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the parenting that you experienced as a child?
So, you know, I think that my parents, first of all, I'm very, very grateful that, you know, they were such wonderful parents to me, such wonderful humans and such wonderful role models all through my life.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I know that they've always been extremely positive towards most of the things I do. So they will always notice every little good thing that I do, kind of motivating me to be a better human. So that is one thing that I think I, even now, their positivity and their positivity towards life and to my growth has made me such a person who has a very positive outlook to life. Kind of any time that is a small, you know, issue or something that doesn't happen that I want to or I desire, I only hear my mother, for instance, telling me, "Kirtana, everything happens for the good. Even if, you know, a lot of times you have not asked for things and Baba has given it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you ask for things, sometimes He gives it to you, and sometimes if He doesn't, then He knows with your limited intelligence, you are only able to understand, okay, this is not what I want right now. But, you know, with His infinite intelligence, He's able to recognize and give you. And then somehow or the other, every time I feel like I have lost something or I have not got what I wanted, just as she says, something else bigger and better will happen immediately. So that's, you know, my mom's constant. So even now when I'm not around my parents all the time, if something doesn't happen right, some kind of disappointment, I'm always thinking of her words, her saying that if something doesn't happen, that is also for your good. So kind of a positive outlook to life, and that's really important. Another thing that I think when I was growing up, and they really cared for every detail of mine. So, you know, like a first standard project, for instance, some book, some sticking picture, something we have to do. Even that, we will sit by me and my mom at that point. She will take her time to, you know, tell me to do it with a perfection, with such perfection. It's just a project, just a homework that my school requires. You know, you can go with that outlook. Oh, you have to do this. Why am I doing this? She could have had that kind of this thing. But she had this, even this project, even nothing was even. Like, this was the important thing at that moment. What I had to do was important, even if it was a very small thing. And, you know, with that importance, we used to work on every small project, every small. And And I want to bring back, even now, every small detail. If there is a small dance performance I need to give, or if it's like a really small project report I need to give at work, I take that care and give that importance to it. This is kind of telling that nothing is just lax. Everything you need to put that importance, and that's something, you know, I grew up learning. Another aspect is the time they spent with me. So, for instance, it's so important, and I recognize this now, that I get to spend some alone time with just me and my dad, some alone time with me and my mom, and some time as a family together. And in fact, I think we also try to do some time with the entire joint, like our entire extended family, grandparents, cousins, aunts and uncles. So we try to get that connection with everybody. So with me and my dad, I feel like I say this now, I didn't recognize this as I was growing up, but he somehow prepared me for my life ahead before I knew I needed it. And let me explain that a little further. So say, for instance, when I was at the thought process and thought level of a fifth standard girl, he would already talk about, you know, what it needs to do when you're in high school in a very general perspective, not in a very, this is what you need to do, this is what, but more kind of higher maturity, you know, building kind of process. So we would go on these walks at night. And he would talk about it. He would share some of his examples, something. He would always tell me everything that is going on at his work. He would share, like, as if I'm an important person, he would share and he would ask, so what do you think we should do? Kind of my opinions about these kind of little things that he is having. And he'd also educate me. So, for instance, in his style of, he would try to, when I was younger, he would try to give me, like, these statistics problems. And we have not even touch statistics in school. He would say, okay, so I knew what statistics was before, and that's his kind of mental, this thing. So I feel like I had known certain things. He wouldn't say, she's only 5 years old, 6 years old. She already starts that learning process. So, you know, learning, when does it start? It starts just as we are born. Right. So that's what they try to kind of, don't try to say, oh, she's only this 2 years old, 3 years. I feel like they always considered me as someone important in the family, someone. So they would share, kind of teach me and this thing. So as a family, and I tell you now that it's kind of so important to me and I relish every minute of it, we would spend in the evenings, a few evenings in the week to play together. By playing, I mean, like, it'd be usually a board game or some mental game, or it would be even as simple as, let's do accounts in the night. They used to do, like, every money that they had spent today, they would write it down and they would tally just as a, and so we would sit as a family and my mom will give all her coins and I will count them and we'll be sitting for half an hour, 45 minutes as a family. You know, sometimes I feel like people don't get that opportunity this today. The parents and children don't get this opportunity. It's both an opportunity and experience for the parents and the children, not just the child or the parent. Like, I feel like everybody's on their phone or some kind of TV or something.
Some gadgets.
Some gadget, basically. And both, even the child and even the parent, everybody is in their own gadget land. So, you know, those experiences, and I think those, I learned a lot of values and a lot of thinking process of how they talk. It's just not just how what we are doing, but the overall experience. You know, when we played games, it was kind of they taught me how to take defeat, for instance. And that's such a huge part of growing up, right? And I see that it's now, when things don't go, or when I lose something or I win something, both ways, you need to learn to be humble in one way, you need to be able to learn to take it in the right spirit. So I think that experience as a family we did, and nothing they would give up. They would say, oh, just because you let her win, nothing like that. So they would kind of make me, just as they'd make me an equal in other things, they would try to give the same kind of, you know, respect and this thing to me. So these kind of activities we used to place. And even now when we meet after a year or 6 months, we try to in the evening play cards or play, like, talk or just sit and chat. Or when we're eating, leave away all our devices and kind of spend time as a family. And that is so pure and so, that's how you share the love and, you know, share your day, whatever it is. So that's kind of, I feel like those have made me who I am today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of my growing up. Everything has been a positive. But as I said, you know, like my mom usually tries to get the positive out of me and always recognize. But doesn't mean, so when I do something wrong, she just lets it go and kind of, she will tell me, she will correct me, my dad will correct me. They would clearly tell me, this is not the right thing. This is, you need to recognize. So say if I had not respected another elder or something like that, they would stop and they would correct me in my private space, in their private space, say, this is, you need to respect elders, everybody is, so just as an example, I don't know if that happened particularly, but I know I can remember exactly when something I did wrong, and you know, they would correct me and they would say, they would give me reasons for why I should do the right thing. So yeah, these a few, as far as I remember, another few examples from my childhood that really created who I am. And I am, like I said, so grateful to have parents who have cared and been loving the whole time.
Very nice. Kirtana, immediately after your schooling, you went to the US for further studies. All alone on the other side of the globe, as a teenager, which part of your grooming helped you?
Yes, I was extremely blessed to have got an admission at a college in Texas. And I, you know, had parents who were willing to send me, you know, in a sense part with me, except I think we got closer in that process. But I think all through my life, it has been building up to that. Even though I was a, you know, single child, there was no kind of this chellam or this kind of pampering that they had given to me. They would respect my views, but they would also like teach me independence, for instance. I would, when I was 8 years old, I did a, you know, took a flight alone from Chennai to Bombay and spent some time with family friends in Bombay, and they took care of me, and I came back. So it's kind of like right from 8 years old, I've had this experience of traveling alone for start off, right? And then when we usually go on vacations or something, I usually would fill out the forms, I would deal with the passport or deal with the documents to go anywhere, right? So all of that kind of gave me an exposure to being on my own, doing things, being responsible for my own things. So when I was growing up also, like, I think that, like I said, my dad always thought in ahead of what I needed in terms of maturity. So he kind of already instilled, without my knowledge, the concept of finance, concept of handling your money, concept of this thing. And I think that helped me, because when you're alone in the other side of the world, you have your bank account, you deal with your money, you deal with, and it requires some thought and process. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think they really helped me through when I was growing up, kind of, they would teach me the importance of money, teach me how to spend, how to, this thing. So these kind of small aspects, I think, helped me to feel comfortable when I went there. In fact, the other things, I think, is they were very, you know, happy and excited whenever I had an opportunity to do something on my own. So, for instance, to start off, I used to get to do some projects that I led in school. So that's kind of like my leadership, my love for leadership, love for taking up something on my own and accomplishing it. Something else that relates to it was when I got the opportunity to go to America when I was in school and go to South Africa. And again, my parents were completely completely okay and completely helpful and supportive of my opportunities. So I had already traveled to places on my own, representing my school, and one place representing India, in things, in kind of conferences. Mm. So I had these opportunities to kind of experience time away from home. Speaking of time away from home, something that I really enjoyed is all of these summer camps, summer things that they would put me in. Again, there was 2-3 weeks or 1 week or something like that, that you're away from your parents, away from... So there was this... I learned to be okay with that distance. They, you know, they're also preparing themselves to be okay with that difference. And yet, instilling importance of being independent, being responsible at each of those locations was something that they really took time. In a sense, they didn't really just tell me, but we practiced it as a family. They would make sure I take the responsibility of my things in my room. Like, you know, all of those little responsibilities they were giving as I was growing up is kind of, I think, what prepped me for my studies abroad. And of course, they, you know, as a study perspective, in terms of studying, right, I don't think after fourth grade my parents have told me to study. They have never, you know, said, you should study now, you should. So they would only, the only thing they would want is, when I go to an exam and come out, the only thing they'll ask is not how you did in the exam, but did you feel prepared for the exam? So in that sense, they didn't mind what the result would be. They were more worried of the process of studying. They will only check, okay, so at that point it was my responsibility, not the school or the exam paper's responsibility to make it easy for me, right? It was completely my responsibility to be prepared for an exam, to be ready for an exam. So they would always check, were you prepared? Do you think you could have prepared better? It was always on me. Again, that is the responsibility. So when you go abroad and study in an environment that is extremely competitive, much more competitive than here, I feel, in college level, you're doing things on your own. You're completely alone. You're kind of doing the role of five people. You're doing a student's role. You're doing your mother's role in terms of figuring out your food and, you know, clothes or whatever. You're kind of doing your father's role, figuring out your money and your spending. You're figuring out your, we had a maid, so she used to take care of cleaning the house or, you know, washing our clothes or whatever. You're doing that. You're taking care of all of those responsibilities. And you're having your own sense of fun, right? So you have your friends, you have to be a friend role. So you're doing so many roles in one place. And so I think that when you're in that position to be able to have that focus on studying and always question not your result, but to question the process of studying, the process of doing, are you doing it right? Are you doing it in, you know, no cheating, no kind of, that kind of importance was really instilled. So I would make sure that I felt prepared for the exam more than will I pass the exam? Will the exam be easy? So that's something. So ever since I was in fourth or fifth standard, that's when my mom kind of let go of dealing with every little homework, every little. She only asked me, will you be prepared for the exam? Have you feel like you've studied enough? And after the exam's over, it didn't matter, because if you feel like you've studied enough, she said, that is all we want. And so they've really focused on the process and not the result. That I think all of those helped me succeed when I was schooling abroad. And I just remembered another one. I think they're very social people, they're very accepting of everybody and anybody, no kind of prejudice against anybody. And so I internally have felt like anybody can be my friend. Anybody, you know, you can connect with everybody. Everybody has something you can learn from. These kind of aspects I have grown up seeing in my parents. They would always take me to all of their social, any wedding in the house, any wedding they were invited, they would take me along. So I had to learn how to talk to older people, younger people, my aged people, kind of the responsibility of spending time with other people who are not just like me, who are different than me. And this, I think, also helped a lot when I was, you know, in a place that it is so multi-cultural. Everybody comes from a very different thought process. When here, I'm so homogeneous in Chennai sometimes. I feel like they are very... in Chennai, I feel homogeneous. Like, everybody's kind of similar to me. They all have grew up in the same... watching the same sport. So
quite predictable.
Quite predictable, right? There are definitely differences in our personalities. And so that kind of you learn. But to be accepting of no matter what... how they are, who their parents are, who, to be able to make great, lovely friends and learn something from other cultures was something, another thing I feel like they prepped me for. You know, like being so social, being so open to other people, having that helping tendency, no matter what, if someone asks for help, reciprocate with help. That's what I think I felt like I did justice to have gone as an undergrad to the US to study.
You said that you were groomed to be so social. So in this regard, I want to ask you something. They say peer pressure plays a huge role in youngsters getting into bad habits. So what are your thoughts on this?
Great question. And I really, it's something that's very close to me, this kind of aspect about it. I really believe that... you can be who you are, and this is kind of my pitch to all of the youngsters who come and try to talk to me, anyone younger than me or my age. I try to convey this, that you can be who you are and people will respect you for that. And if they don't, I don't think that's something you should feel bad for, and this is something that I really feel very important in me. So the one thing I feel kind of lucky is that, just like I said, there are so many cultures and so many from people from everywhere in the U.S. There is a concept of being okay and respecting another person's belief. That's such a huge, huge part in that country. Sometimes I feel that in India it's so easy. You are religious, you don't drink or what because of religion. They kind of, you know, they're able to just say, this is nothing. Look, I'm also, you know, it's so easy for them to kind of shift you and this thing. I mean, even in that situation, I think people need to be able to stand for what they believe. And no matter what situation, they need to stand for what they believe. And in the U.S., it's actually, in my opinion, a little more easier. I can just say, this is what it is, and they will not ask me again. It's kind of that, I said, like, multicultural aspect about it. They're very respecting of another person's belief and culture and individuality. So, and I think that even if you're in such a situation or not, it doesn't matter. I think it's so important to keep your stance on this thing. And I feel like it's just sad that sometimes it's okay to do certain things because your friends are doing. And, you know, in order to deal with that, I think my parents have always been being a role model for me in that aspect. So they, I said, are social people, and they are out. We go out and we are enjoying in the night. So we really enjoy being with the people, being, you know, showing the love and happiness everywhere. And that is what we enjoy. And then I just learned and picked it up from my parents. There's nothing, and I saw that they enjoyed, and they were not in any way outcasted or didn't have friends. They had a ton of friends. And I feel like that's the same in my life. I'm so blessed to have so many people in my life who care about me so away from my family. I mean, I can say that is my home, you know, Seattle is my home, because I feel so part of that community, I have community and friends who care and who check on me, who are, you know, if I want to talk, there's somebody. If I want to go to a movie, there is somebody. You know, there's always that sense of community. And I feel like they respect me for who I am. And in turn, I am very confident and, confident in telling them it's okay, I will be who I am and nothing else can change that. So I think that confidence was also kind of something I learned from my child. Just stand up for your values and it's okay. Because if someone is not accepting of your values, then there is no reason to have my mind be shut off because of that. They shouldn't be able to affect me in any way. So.
Kirtana, when you went to the US, you had all the freedom there. So how did you use this?
Let me just say that it's not just when I went to the US, right? I felt like I always had that freedom to be. And it's not just that I had the freedom. I was given that with that, on the flip side, I have as much responsibility, right? So when I had the freedom to, for instance, in school, to stay back and work on extra projects, and, you know, there's no pressure. At the same time, I was had the responsibility to inform my parents, okay, it will take me this much time. This is when I will be able to leave. So with that freedom, every moment there was that responsibility. So similarly, I think that's the training. Mm-hmm. Always they would give me the freedom to do some things. But at the same time, they need to be informed, or they need to know, because I was under their, they cared. I need to understand that they care about me throughout. So similarly, when I went to the US, it, in the sense, I didn't have to, you know, inform them about their daily activities or anything, because I knew I had the responsibility. It was my own responsibility, not my responsibility to my parents, but my own responsibility to utilize my freedom in the right way. So I always, you know, the freedom that you're mentioning, in my opinion, is the time that I have for myself. It's the space, my own space that I had. And my attitude to all that was, wow, what can I do with that? How can I utilize it to help others? How can I utilize it to,
wonderful,
to grow myself? So with that extra time or extra space, I started learning languages. I started volunteering in so many places, just because it's, you know, at that point, gave me so much happiness to see the happiness on the face of children that I helped when I volunteered. When I was teaching kids about science or, you know, experiments, I always felt that, you know, my time and my freedom to do what I want is in turn bringing joy and happiness to another person. Like I said, with that freedom came so much responsibility to utilize everything in the right way. So I felt that, you know, especially in the US, you don't have classes all day. You have a lot of spare time. You have class 3 hours a day, and the rest of the time is free, and you are in a dorm, you have friends. So I worked on several aspects of my own self during that time. So I would kind of learn something new. I would maybe get to know a friend very well, you know, or learn something from them. Maybe utilize that to do something for the college. Kind of, I, you know, worked on a few things in college, so I would try to spend the time. So, you know, if you have time in hand, it's best to utilize that in the right right way. And so, the moment you have free time, I always was looking for something to do, because when I'm at home, in my room or alone, just with free time, it's only thoughts that are not great happen, right? So it's so important to be, even now, you know, when I'm working, work is only like 9 to 6 or something like that. So I always keep my time, open for other things. I'm helping at a school as a teacher. I go and teach as an after-school program for girls to give them confidence and positivity in life. So I try to utilize all of my time and freedom to do things for either for others or my own, you know, growth as a person, or as a person. Those are I want to bring this back and say, you know, my dad always told me, when you have two things to do, somehow you almost only finish 1.5 of that. You know, you procrastinate. You're like, oh, I can do whenever. But when you have 10 things to do, when you add on the 11th thing, it's very easy for some reason. Because you're just kind of so used to being doing so many things. You're so used to training your mind to be busy. So even with that freedom, what I did was always train my mind to be busy in activities, to whatever it may be, so that I was benefiting others or myself in that process. So I think my dad always told me, and it's not just that, like my love for social work and social service or volunteering work came from years ago. I mean, my grandfather, my father, all of them were big on social. They would always love to give either time or money or food or, you know, in some form or fashion. It's just that volunteering mind. And I think that my dad always looked up and, you know, had Swami's words about love all and serve all, kind of very true to his heart, and would always tell me, you know, that's not even tell me, but by actions, show me that that is what is true happiness. So, you know, at that point when you start doing that, this peer pressure, this freedom, all of this becomes so secondary. You're only utilizing your time for others or yourself. So it just gives you that joy. And at when you reach and experience that happiness, it doesn't matter from then on. So it's
excellent.
Yeah. You know, just as I mentioned, you know, I learned or experientially learned that social service is so important and gives you happiness beyond anything. And I'll follow that religiously. I follow that and I always do that. Another thing that comes to my mind is how both my parents treated their parents when I was growing up. Even today, you know, my dad spends so much quality time with his mom and his dad, kind of going to them, giving them hugs, carrying them, or, you know, just joyfully talking with them. And, you know, my mom would also, like, go to her parents' house. You just spend such quality time, take me along, we would spend time with them, or, you know, things like that. The love that they showed for their parents, I think right now, I mean, as a 23 year old, it is, tables are slightly turning slowly, and I feel like I want to give my world to my parents. I want to it's not sense of give back, because it's not a transactional relationship. It's not a giving back. No matter what I do, I won't be able to fully give back in any way what they have given me, right? Sure. They have given me everything who I am. But in some way, to make them have that smile on their face, mm-hmm. or, you know, feel that proudness for me, or anything that they can take as and all of those make such a huge difference to them. And I learned watching them how to treat their own parents. It's so important. That family bonding is so important. That, and they gave so much importance to their parents, my grandparents. You know, they gave so much importance. And now, even now, I feel like I give importance to my grandparents and my parents and my relatives, because of just that. It's just so... Because no matter what I do, it's just, there's so much part of me. So when they visit me or I visit them, I try to take care of them in whatever way I can. I mean, it could be, you know, whiles back when I just could take care of them as, you know, show them love. But now I feel like I can do just a little more. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, when my parents are there, I cook for them, or, you know, or I, you know, just take them around, make them happy, or spend time. That those little things, I think I learned so much from just watching my dad and mom respect and love their parents. So this is, I think, very important. And I'm in that stage of my mm-hmm. life that I'm transitioning from just being a child to being someone who can support my parents. So
wonderful, Keetana. Like the saying goes, the child is the father of the man. Today, through your experiences as a child, we learned some interesting facets of parenting. It was a pleasure listening to you, yeah.
Thank you so much. I mean, I don't know what I can contribute in any way, but it's my honor, and I am blessed to be able to share what I have and what I've experienced in my life. So thank you so much for having me, Sairam. Sairam.
Brothers and sisters, to quote Khalil Gibran, your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. Our children are in reality Swami's property. All that we need to do is be like responsible and humble trustees, taking care of His property, the wonderful children who have come through us to this world. Sairam.
You were listening to a Tryst with Divinity conversation with Miss Kirtana Kumar. Hailing from Chennai, Miss Kirtana belongs to a family of loving Sai devotees who have been engaged in Sai Seva for nearly 3 decades. Dear listener, you may send in your feedback as always to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.